I'm very happy now to welcome to the program Pamela McCorduck. She's author of the new novel, Bounded Rationality, and she will be reading and signing books on Saturday, August 25th at 2 in the afternoon at Garcia Street Books. Welcome.
Well, thank you, Charlotte. It's really nice to be here.
It's great to have you on the show. Now, this is a novel that is very wide-ranging. I mean, it covers love and family, and it covers mathematics and science and loss and grief and Santa Fe and New York City and a lot of things. It's the second book in a trilogy, and I wondered, what was the starting point for you?
I was a visitor at the Santa Fe Institute some years ago in my own right. My husband happens to be on the external faculty there. And the ideas were just a natural thing for me because I had been writing about artificial intelligence most of my career. And so I found these ideas absolutely fascinating. And time went on, and I thought, can I possibly embody some of these wonderful ideas in a novel? And that novel turned out, at first, to be The Edge of Chaos, which was the first book I published. And I thought, oh, fine, end of project. No, not end of project. These people weren't through with me, and I wasn't through with them.
So it's the same characters.
Yeah, some of the same characters. There are new characters in the second book. Among them, Leandro Torres, who is an architect, and Lucy Marchmont, who is a legal interpreter and translator.
And so it's interesting when you're using a novel as a vehicle for ideas, because by its nature, it's far more than that. Because it's not just a vehicle for ideas. It's people living and people having stories and people wrestling with the circumstances of their lives, and the ideas weave through those things and in fact help or sometimes hinder people from dealing with things.
Yes. And I've heard other novelists say this, in fact, as far back as Charlotte Bronte. The characters take on a life of their own. And so the process is more like discovery than invention. You think, as things are going along, don't do that. You will be so sorry if you do that. But he goes ahead and does it anyway. So what can you do?
Is that?
I wish I knew. It is almost like a channeling of a character. And this character comes to you. You have no idea where he has come from, for the most part. And you watch this character take on a life of his or her own, and there you are. You're just the medium. It sounds very mystical, but as I say, at least Charlotte Bronte felt the same way. So
everybody feels the same way, or so many people do. And we were just having a conversation on the air with a cosmologist about whether, for example, mathematics was invented or discovered. And one wonders if there's a real analogy between that question and, I mean, he came down squarely on the idea that mathematics is discovered, not invented. These characters are also discovered.
So it feels to me, because they surprise me, because I don't plan how the book is going to move or how it ends, but I know when I've reached the end.
Now, when you have a book like this, and there's quite a lot of characters in it, and it starts out in a way that seems maybe like a love story, an affair that might or might not go on. I mean, at the very beginning, I thought, these guys aren't going to make it. And, of course, like in real life, you don't know.
That's right.
But there's a lot of complexity to the relationships, because it's not just the two people to each other, but also children and colleagues, and then relationships to places.
Exactly.
Relationship to land, relationship to events in history, 9/11. And when you think about complexity, and here you are writing a book where one of the characters is at the Santa Fe Institute, do you think of your characters as being part of literally a complex system?
Yes, very much so. And as you know, in complex systems, there are lots of moving parts. There are lots of interactions. Mostly, what happens in complex systems is that one change way over here will make another change way over here, totally unpredictable. and you cannot tell how it's going to turn out. And that's the way I feel about these people's stories. You know, how is it going to turn out? I don't know.
Now, one of our heroine, Judith, is a scientist and a mathematician, and she does have what I think you call, or she calls somewhere in the book, a computational approach to human relationship
yes,
problems.
She does. And luckily, the people who love her tolerate this.
Right. But it doesn't necessarily work very well, or does it?
No. Well, that the reader will have to judge. But people who love her, including her very close friend, Ron, who's known her since they were children, and, of course, her husband, they're okay with that. They're okay with that. It's a refreshing change. Her husband's first wife was hysterical, and he says, I love your rationality. So there you are.
Right, right. Now, there are questions brought up, and I think this is probably one of the themes, is about questions of appearance versus reality.
Oh, yes. Oh, yes. It is very explicit in the work of one of the daughters of one of the characters. She's an artist, or she's trying to be an artist, and she realizes that one of the things that she's going to have to do is deal with the appearances under reality. And she realizes that she's written, you know, essays in college about this, but she's never really dealt with the issue, and that is her task. Many other people have the same thing. The son, sister to this woman, spends a lot of time trying to figure out what his dreams are all about because they're so strange. And which is the appearance? Which is the reality? It's not entirely clear.
Right. And then it's all kind of meta because you're writing a novel.
Is that true?
Where you're basically creating or discovering a reality.
Yes, right, right, right.
Now, one of the things that's nice about the book for those of us who live in New Mexico is that a lot of it takes place here.
Oh, it's very much bound to the geography of northern New Mexico. After 9/11, several of the characters go to a place where they feel comforted and happy and serene once again. One of those is the Dwan Light Sanctuary, which is just north of Las Vegas. Another is La Plaza Blanca, which is near Georgia O'Keeffe territory. These places mean a great deal to these characters. They want to be there. They need to be there. It is a comfort to them.
And it's a comfort to them for all kinds of reasons, and one of the reasons goes back to mathematics.
Well, as that turns out, yes. Judith, the mathematician, goes to the Dwan Light Sanctuary, and she's never somehow been there before. And the moment she walks in, she starts looking at the mathematics that have gone into the planning of this place, and she's absolutely enchanted by this, until finally she says, get over yourself, you know. This is a place for meditation, for contemplation, for consolation. And that's what happens. But she has to go through the mathematical steps first.
Right. Well, I was wondering as I was reading that, maybe that was kind of her consolation.
Yeah, in lots of ways it is. Sure. Yeah.
Now, when you're writing a place where one of the characters is from a local institution, namely the Santa Fe Institute, do you have to be careful of making sure the characters aren't actually too close to any one person?
Yeah, I want to be able to go back. The Institute has been wonderfully tolerant, maybe even supportive, I should say. Chris Wood, the vice president, has been really kind about making sure that everybody on the staff knows that the book is out. The work that one of the characters does, Mikey Torres, who is the son of the architect, is in fact the work done by Jeff West. And Jeff West and his colleagues, he's got a big team of people, where they're trying to wrestle with the idea of, can you have a scientific notion of how cities work? Well, this is bizarre to some people. It's fascinating to me, it's fascinating to them, it's fascinating to a lot of people, and that is what Mikey Torres is working on, and how this architect, who is world famous, happened to come to this little town of Santa Fe. He wants to be with his family. He's lonely for all the glitz and whatnot that surrounds his life. He's lonely. He wants a family connection.
And I think what I like about the novel, and I was thinking about this when Rebecca Goldstein was here, and we talked to her on this show about one of her novels. She's a philosopher who is also a novelist, or a novelist who's, which way is it go? Anyway, is that the novel is the place where, first of all, you can embody ideas.
Right.
And you can basically integrate or try to integrate everything you know.
Yes. When you look at what these characters are doing in this book, it's basically my lifetime of experience. What I love in music, what I love in art, what I love in architecture. I had help. Please, don't get me wrong. I had a couple of architects help me out, and one emailed me this morning who's just read it and said, hey, you got that part right. I can't speak to the other parts, but you got the architecture completely right, and you said some things I've never heard. So I was very pleased with that. So I turn to topics that I've known superficially and say, okay, I really want to know more about this. What can I know? And that's what I did with the work of West and his colleagues. I knew it superficially. I sat down and read scads of papers to bring it into two or three paragraphs like that.
And the trick is making it not peripheral, but actually integral to the themes of the book.
Yes, you've got to do that. You know, I could have written essays about a dozen different topics. These are the ones that my characters are concerned with, and therefore I've got to spend some time being concerned with.
We're talking to Pamela McCordick about her novel, Bounded Rationality. Now, what is the meaning of that term, the title?
This is a term that was originally coined by a Nobel laureate economist, a man by the name of Herbert Simon. And what he meant by that is that people intend to behave rationally. And in fact, in classical economics, you'll hear the phrase, rational man. Well, there is no such thing. And
yeah, that's an oxymoron.
Yeah, just about. But we do intend it. We intend to be rational, but our rationality is bounded. And it's bounded by what we know. It's bounded by how much time we have to think about an issue. It's bounded by how much information we can find about an issue. It's bounded, limited is another word, in lots of ways. The phrase became bounded rationality, so that's why I used it. And Herb was a friend of mine, and I was delighted to be able to give this little tribute to him. Not that he needs it from me, but it really was an homage to a wonderful, wonderful human being.
And when you think about all the things that the people in your book go through, they're things that really can't be solved by dealing with rational processes. I mean, you've got family, deep generational family problems. You've got substance abuse and addiction and all those kinds of things.
No, it's you cannot reason your way out of a lot of these things. And you cannot reason your way out of grief. You must endure it.
Right. And that's another thing that I thought was nice. I mean, difficult, obviously. But the way that people deal with grief and the way that dealing or not dealing makes other things worse and
yes.
You're watching it go by and you don't seem to be able to do anything about it. And it's just hard.
It's very hard. And this is part of grown-up life. Things happen in the happiest of lives, and you think, this can't be happening to me.
Right.
But it does.
Well, and that's another thing. It's all when I, starting the book, here are these two golden people getting on a private jet, reading the New York Times and the Wall Street Journal, and I think, blech.
Some very nice people read the New York Times and the Wall Street Journal.
I know, but on a private, I don't know. That says more about me than it does about them, but here they are, and you think, wow, these privileged people with their lovely lives, and the guy knows how to make money, and he's made a lot of it, and again, that's the appearance, and the
yes.
reality underneath that is that there's a lot of burdens on him and on both of them caused precisely by their success.
Yes, partly by their success, and partly by where they have come from themselves. You learn after a while that this very wealthy man who is setting up a foundation based on the principles of complexity has in fact never known his own father. And even his wife doesn't know what a tremendous wound this is to him. When 9/11 comes, and it happens in the course of the book, his father shows up in his office, and he's absolutely undone. This is a man who has, frankly, ruined firms, brought down governments, and he cannot cope with the biological fact of his own father. He is simply undone.
So this is the second in the trilogy. Now, was it while you were writing this that you realized that there was a third book?
Yes. At the end of the second book, I thought, oh, but there are so many things I need to explore yet. And my editor said, well, you know, you really got to tie this one up and tie that. And I said, no, it's already long enough. I'll write a third one. That's when it became a trilogy. So that's, 250 manuscript pages long. And
So we'll be seeing you back here at this table soon.
I hope so.
The book is called Bounded Rationality. It's the second novel in a trilogy by Pamela McCorduck, and she will be reading and signing books this coming Saturday, August 25th at 2 o'clock at Garcia Street Books. Thank you so much for being with us.
Thank you, Barry Charlotte. It's always a pleasure.